which alone can guarantee respect for the inalienable dignity and rights of each man, woman and child in our world, including the most defenseless of all human beings, the unborn child in the mother's womb.
Pope Benedict, speaking at a mass at Yankee Stadium during his recent visit to the United States. Shortly after that, he was off to Australia. He spoke for World Youth Day. These popes have a way with the young people nowadays, John Paul and Benedict as well. His message for the youth was deep and complex. The media said, "We saw the Pope turn green." Green in the sense of an environmental message, but they seem to miss the greater context of the Pope's concern for the planet. We're going to talk about the media's coverage of Pope Benedict. Colin Carroll Campbell joins us here for the first 10 minutes of Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. You can join us live this Thursday, the 24th of July. Our toll-free number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-MYIE, or email us here in the studio with questions or comments. Talkback at issuesetc.org. Talkback at issuesetc.org. Scripture and tradition will be the subject for our conversation, starting in about 20 minutes with Dr. Cameron McKenzie. Colin Carroll Campbell is a regular guest, a St. Louis-based fellow for the Ethics and Public Policy Center, author of the book The New Faithful. She writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, her latest, A Closer Look at the Pope's Environmental Message. Colleen, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
How does the media get the Pope's major addresses wrong, whether it be World Youth Day or a homily during a mass?
Well, there are almost as many ways as there are journalists sometimes, it seems, when reading and watching coverage of papal events. They at least understand, certainly, as you really couldn't miss with these roaring crowds. The one he drew in Australia for his closing mass was the largest in Australian history, 400,000 people. They see the young people cheering for the Pope. They see the crowds flocking to him, so they know something's going on there, and some more astute journalists kind of know what's going on, but a lot of them pick up on one or two things he says, and this is particularly true of his environmental comments, and kind of run with that, assuming that he's throwing his support to this or that political movement, when usually he's saying something more complex and much deeper.
We're talking about a man much like his predecessor, perhaps even more so, who is quite accustomed to thinking in the depths of the deep end of the theological pool, and yet I think probably on par with his predecessor, John Paul II, able to communicate it in a simple way that the laity understand it. How does the media picked up on the fact that he talked a bit about the environment? What is the context from which this pope was discussing that issue?
Well, I think what was interesting is he did touch upon the natural environment, but what he actually did is use that as an entry point to some deeper themes, as you mentioned. So he said, yes, it's good, this is now speaking to his young audiences, it's good that you're concerned about the natural environment, but you also need to be concerned about the social environment. He called it the habitat we fashion for ourselves. He said, as you're worrying about what kind of legacy we're leaving, what kind of planet we're leaving to the next generation, we need to worry about what sort of social and spiritual legacy we're leaving as well. And he cited everything from, you know, drug abuse to violence and sex in the media to killing of innocent unborn children, the euthanasia of the elderly, the marginalizing of the poor. And he mentioned all of this, especially when going back to the natural environment, and said, remember that the human person is the pinnacle of God's created world. So we always need to have policies and concerns that put the person before things, before consumerism, and yes, before plants and animals. So he said, even as you worry about, for instance, the erosion of the rainforest, you need to be worried also about what he called a spiritual desert that's kind of creeping across wealthy Western nations, that is a desert of interior emptiness and despair that drives people to spend their lives chasing things rather than searching for God and trying to grow closer to him. So it's a much deeper message than, I'm afraid, what a lot of the headlines captured.
I was listening to the homily that we had a piece from before that he gave at Yankee Stadium when he gave Mass when he was in the United States recently. And I listened to the entire thing. It's not a very long homily, but he starts out by talking about the contributions of Catholics in a free America from its earliest days. and what faithful confessing Catholics have done in the name of freedom and in the United States. He brings it all to literally the final point where he talks about protecting all human beings, men, women, and children, especially the most helpless, those unborn in the mother's womb. End of homily, standing ovation.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot help but think that this is a man who knows what his message is in the United States and elsewhere when it comes to the defense of life.
That's absolutely right, and that was really remarkable because, of course, it was a friendly crowd that liked him, but it was interesting that the most rapturous applause came at those lines, at the points when he spoke out for unborn human life, because I think Catholics in America, many of them at least, and just like many other Christians in America, recognize that this is a form of human life that's particularly endangered. So, yes, it's interesting when he goes to Australia, when he goes to America, when he goes to Cologne, Germany, as he did a few years ago for the last World Youth Day, he really hits that message about intrinsic human dignity hard, because I think he knows that in all of our preoccupation with the cause du jour, and I think, you know, this decade, it's environmental awareness, next decade, who knows what it'll be, we tend to have an ability to forget the intrinsic dignity of the human person and remember that the human person should be our first cause when it comes to worrying about freedom and rights and dignity. That doesn't mean we have to disregard the others, but he's always calling us back to that, to a form of a sort of Christian humanism that celebrates the person as a creation of God and a reflection of God's image.
You mentioned this several times, and I think it's part of the context of our discussion here. We talked a couple years ago about when you came out with your book, The New Faithful, wherein you note that the younger generation is finding an affinity for historic Christianity and its forms. It's evidenced by the fact that both the last pope and this one are wildly popular with people who are under 30, but better than that, under 20. What is going on?
Well, I think it's very interesting because you'll often have secular baby boomer journalists covering this saying this can't possibly be the Pope they're cheering for. They must be cheering for something else. Well, it just has been happening for 2.5 decades now, 3 really, since John Paul started these World Youth Days. And I think it's finally become sort of an undeniable fact, their popularity. If you look at it, these are men who are not telling the crowds what they want to hear. They're not telling kids to just do whatever feels good. They're proclaiming the truth. Gospel values in a countercultural way. They're not wrapping it in something confusing or dressing it up or diluting it. They're just flat out saying it. They're saying, you know, your youthful idealism is a good thing. Now you need to direct it to the best thing, which is service of God and service of your neighbor secondarily. And they're very authentic. They're not trying to market this to kids. And I think it's important to note because I think a lot of youth pastors often think that, you know, kids need to be entertained, but they don't want to be challenged. They like compromise, but they don't want to hear about absolute truths. But, you know, these last two popes have proven that wrong. They've shown that, in fact, you can preach the gospel, hit them straight between the eyes with it, and if anything, you're actually going to attract more attention because young people know then that you're taking them seriously.
The term authenticity comes to mind. Again, the contrast you laid there, the youth pastor who, you know, wears his cargo shorts, his flip-flops, and his baseball cap on backwards,
right.
Trying to be hip, trying to fit in with the young people, contrasted with these elderly popes dressed in their papal regalia, even their mitre, things that date back millennia, standing there in the midst of a liturgy that dates back millennia, in which the children are not and the youth are not only participating but understanding and receiving from. The contrast couldn't be greater.
No, it really couldn't. And I think that connects again to another trend among the young. They want to discover a faith that's rooted in something that's lasted longer than the last 20 years. They're attracted to these historical forms of worship, and they're yearning for the mystery of God, for being in touch with his transcendence, not simply, you know, God, my hip, cool friend. You know, I think they have a lot of friends. They have a lot of people who want to please them and tell them what they want to hear. So it's very attractive when they see someone who's willing to tell them a hard truth, willing to challenge them to radically transform their lives, to do something that's not popular or cool or hip, but something that's right. I think that's very appealing to young people because that's precisely the time in a person's life where you're willing to hear a message like that and turn your life around in response to it.
With only about 30 seconds, the Pope is kind of like the president. He can speak over the heads of the media if he's good at it. Is this Pope going to be able to get his message across in spite of the filter that the media puts between him and the popular audience?
I think he is, and I think he already has in his visit to America. I think it was very clear that no matter which way you wanted to spin it, it was clear people were hearing him loud and clear on things like the life issue and affirming the role of religion in public life, and people were responding to him and to that message.
Colleen Carroll Campbell is a St. Louis-based fellow for the Ethics and Public Policy Center, author of the new book, The New Faithful, and she writes a column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch every week. This week's column, a closer look at the Pope's environmental message. You can read her columns, all of them, at Colleen-Campbell.com. Colleen-Campbell.com. Colleen, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd.
Dr. Cameron McKenzie joins us on the other side of this break. They call it an age-old debate, scripture and tradition. I think people are coming to the realization that while Scripture is the sole norm of and source of all doctrine and practice, that tradition, when it is handed down through Scripture, from those roots of Scripture, should also be embraced. We'll talk about the proper understanding of Scripture and tradition, their relationship, with Dr. Cameron McKenzie after this.